Introducing the Black Jewish Queen Live Chat with the Black Jewish Queen herself, your host, Dr. Denise Gotautis.
Hey, everybody. Hi, everyone. Thanks for the welcome. We have a great program today. I thank all the people who followed me from Ariel's Torah Talk and everything, and I am just so happy. I'm really, really happy to be a part of the Caribbean Radio Show, the family. And I'm so thankful to have my friend here and to be a part of his show with the chat reel. I'm happy to be the new host of the Black Jewish Queen Live Chat. And so, we're going to have a wonderful program with today's guest, the host of the chat reel, Billy Tappan, who is a music producer and a Hollywood producer, and he is a Motown alumni. I'm just so happy he's going to be here today. And right now, before he comes, I want to start us off with the program so that our guest, he can get ready to come on. And we are going to go from a song that is about Shammai, the Israeli prayer, which is a song that I love. It's a really, really neat song. I kind of found it and got it for today's program. And also, after that, I'm going to play one of Billy's songs. And this is going to be a fun program. So everybody, please stay tuned. You are listening to the Caribbean Radio Show with Dr. Denise Gotautis on the Black Jewish Queen Live Chat.
Yeah. Bye.
Hey, baby. What are you gonna do?
I can't wait long. I can't wait for eternity. Because you mean so much to me. It seems we fell apart. But I just wanna say this to you. It's you that I need. And this is what I have.
Together like hand in glove. Seems our love's been getting weaker, girl. Maybe you found another love. Oh, life changes. I've never given up on you.
Was wonderful, and the singer of that song is my special guest tonight, the host of the Chat Reel, Bill Tappan. And today's special guest on the Black Jewish Queen Live Chat Show is music producer and Hollywood producer, Motown alumni Billy Tappan. He is the host from the Chat Reel here on the Caribbean Radio Show, and tonight he will be sharing his metaphysical, meaning beyond physical experience, which is spiritual. He will be sharing that he had physically died after heart failure years ago. And so I am so happy that everyone came to just be a listener in on today's program. And we're going to go right into the program. And right now, dear audience, I want to introduce Billy Tappan.
Thank you.
Now, Billy, welcome,
sure.
Welcome.
Yeah. I'm glad
to be
here.
And what I wanted to ask you, I'm so glad that you're here. What I wanted to ask you was about your experience. I wanted you to, if you will, you know, give everyone a little background about yourself and what led up to the experience.
Okay. I was born and raised in Grand Rapids, Michigan. My mother, Doris Jean Lett, and my stepfather, Joseph W. Nelson. And I had a great life. I started out young with singing. I started out about maybe 4 or 5 years old. I'd sit by the stereo and just kind of listen to different songs, a lot of Motown stuff, and just kind of imitating different songs, you know. And I realized at that point in time that that is what I want to do with my life. Plus, I had one of my aunts had actually worked with one of the members of the Drifters. She actually went off to be one of the members of the Drifters. So I used to see them rehearse quite a bit. My mother was loving. She was very loving. And being an only child, it helped me kind of tune into my inner self. So as growing up in Grand Rapids was a Dutch town. And it was, you know, we had basic things that we did. And that come up in an era of segregation. And I didn't experience a lot of that, but it was there. It was blatant in some areas. But to move forward, I started my career with local bands. And, you know, I ended up doing a lot of drugs and stuff like that. And, it got to the point, in the latter 70s, I kind of got tired and kind of got burnt out. And I just went up north to stay with my my aunt and uncle. And from that point, I decided that I need to make a move because I wasn't doing anything musically. I was just kind of working, and I just needed to do something different. I worked for General Motors for some years. To that, I decided I got to do something in music. So I started my career in 1984. That song that you heard, "Hurry, Don't You Wait," basically was released in 86. That was the beginning of my start, my music career. And as we went on through that, I started opening up for different acts like Johnny Taylor, Eddie Kendricks and David Ruffin. I work with Bernard Wright, Yardbirds and Peoples, which are American acts that are well known. And I've actually did a lot of different stuff throughout my career. I became a Motown alumni about maybe 6-7 years ago. And as I started progressing through my music career and doing a lot of shows, around 90, I think about 96, I started having some issues, and I went and got checked out and discovered that I had an enlarged heart. And it wasn't something that, you know, my family had or anything like that. It's just something that was a virus or something that actually hit me. And I still continued to try to perform, but I was kind of struggling. So I kind of backed off, and I, right around after being medicated, around 2000, I had an episode where I had a minor stroke. And so at this point in time, you know, they called it in time. Everything was fine. And from that point, I was doing well. But my doctor's still saying that, you know, my heart's not getting any better. It might come a point in time where you might need a heart. So I'm like, okay. I stopped smoking at that time and stopped drinking. And then in 2002, I was with my wife, and actually we're getting some Chinese food, And we're right, like, by a McDonald's. And it was like a flash that hit me. And I felt really weird.
Wow.
And I knew something was going on. And she's inside, you know, waiting for the order. And I didn't know what to do. You know, I had to wait for her to get back to the car. Finally, she got back to the car. And she took me to the hospital. And they actually dealt with me there. The other time
right.
that I had the stroke in 2002 was I was with a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, and we were I had a business that I was doing delivering transmission parts, you know, for this company
right.
I contracted. So we're checking on a vehicle that was overheating, and I seen it was overheating. We rolled for a minute, and we were going to go to breakfast after that, so we took the car back. And we're heading to breakfast, and all of a sudden my friend was talking to me, and I just felt this shock in the back of my head. And I just felt that weird feeling, and I knew something was wrong. And at that point in time, I couldn't talk, and he recognized it. You know, I can only say yes and no. And he recognized and took me to the hospital, and it took about 8 or 9 hours to recover. Well, moving on from that point,
wow.
We're getting into everything's going well throughout these times. And up until 2009, I just it just kind of gave out. And they took me to the hospital, rushed me to the hospital. And I was at Sparrow Hospital here in Lansing. And I was there, and they had me there for about 3 or 4 days. And they said, well, it's nothing we can do for you here. We have to, you know, transfer you over to the University of Michigan, which they did. So we arrived there, and everything is good. I'm feeling good, you know. I've not eaten anything, you know, so that was an issue. I didn't feel like eating. And I actually called my wife and said, hey, you know what, everything seems to, you know, be good. I feel good. I said, it's a nice room here. I said, so I'm just going to sit back here and just relax. So after I got off the phone, it was like a God-sent situation. Because the doctors came to see me, and they're asking me how I'm doing. I said, I'm doing great. And within, like, seconds, I started getting sick. I said, you know, and they're talking, and I'm hearing it, but I'm starting to get sick. And I'm like, I need to have that basket over there, the wastebasket. And so they gave me the wastebasket. I hadn't eaten anything, and I was trying to bring something up that wasn't there, and they said I just fell back. And they rushed me into emergency. I think they said I was down about 5 minutes. And as that happening, I noticed that I was not in my body. I was like kind of looking at a light. And there was something that was telling me, don't look back. Don't look back. And as I
And you know, Billy,
that,
I want to interject because I remember when your mother, after that happened, she told me you had been in the hospital, but she called me and told me that something was going on. She said, Denise, Billy, something's happening. I need you to pray. I remember. And I just wanted to interject that because I don't know whether you knew that or not. And I told her, okay, I'm going to be praying. And so go on. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. And so something was telling me, don't look back. You know what I'm saying? So I felt something negative. And I kind of like was real scared, you know. And then I seen this light, but it was like real dim. And it's kind of ironic because it's like I seen like an older guy, kind of weird. It's like in a pickup truck, old pickup truck. And I was asking him, how do I get to heaven? And he says, just follow the light. As I followed the light, I woke up in this white room. And there was a voice and a shadow, and there was a plasma type screen. And the voice said that you're going to see your life review. So I'm sitting there, you know, I'm like looking at this stuff. And what I discovered in this whole situation is that what I seen from a child, from being born and all that, I noticed if you hurt somebody, you feel it. You feel their pain. Whatever you say in life cannot be changed. You can be outside yourself, but you cannot change what you said. So if you indirectly hurt somebody, you actually still feel their pain. And I felt in my situation, it was a non-judging situation from God. I felt I was judging myself. And, you know, I felt everything that a person felt, everything that I ever said, everything I ever did. You know, if I was going to rate myself, I would have to rate myself on a D average as in education. It was just so ironic. And I heard the voice say that, you know, you have to go back. And I'm like, you know, I want to be able to experience being here. You know what I'm saying? I'm here now. He says, but you have some things you have to do. You got to go back. So as that happened, you know, I had no choice. I had to go back. But what happened to me as I came back into my body, I woke up and I was like on the heart transplant list waiting for a heart. And I was okay. I was okay with it because, you know, that experience showed me that, you know, I was going to be okay. But what I couldn't figure out is why I was sent back and what I was supposed to do. So I sat there and I contemplated and I talked to God directly and said, I don't know. What do you want me to do? I mean, I did everything. I did some bad things. I did some good things, you know. And as I heard it, it's like they wanted me to do my life story, which I started writing. As we go through the story, I noticed that I thought it was completed before I got in my heart. But when I got in my heart, I realized I still had a ways to go with the story. So I got in my heart in 2010 on the list. I kept on going on the list, off the list, because my white blood cells were actually going out. They were getting more white blood cells or something to that nature. I'm not really sure, but I do know that finally I got the heart. And I got it from a young lady named Gabrielle Renee Johnson. And
now I wanted you to tell before after you though had that experience with your life review and everything, and when you re-entered your body, because I know when you re-entered your body, did you have the new heart, or did they just resuscitate you back?
No, they resuscitated me back. Yeah, they resuscitated me back.
And before you entered your body, is there anything else that you seen after you were told to come back?
You know what I did? Actually, when I woke up, what I did see, I was looking at, you know how they have the hospital lights in your room, and it's kind of like a seal around it, you know what I'm saying? And I did see an image of Jesus in that. And I kept on staring at it. And I'm like, and I talked to my wife and I think Alicia, my daughter, and I asked them if they'd seen it. And they didn't see it, but I seen it. So I was very comfortable about that whole situation. And as we get into the transplant part, is when I started getting some experiences after transplant where when I got home, I had, you know, it takes a year to actually see who the heart came from. And in some cases, some people never know. I had a friend that was with Motown, and he had a heart, and he never found out who the people were. And I think it's necessary that you need to know. But in this particular case, we ended up having the heart transplant. And when I got home, a year after, I finally got approved to meet the family. But before I did that, I started having these dreams of this young lady. And it was just really odd because, you know, when I was with one of my friends and they asked me, it's like at the end of the dream. And they asked me, who was that? I said, I don't know. And so that passed by. I had a chance to meet the family. And before that happened, I got a picture from the mother and a letter, a very touching letter. I mean, it had me in tears. And I looked at the picture.
Amazing.
And I just kind of freaked out. This is the same young lady I seen in my dream. After that.
Right. Now, Billy, I wanted to remind you of one more part. Because I remember when you were telling me, too, when after it had happened, before you entered your body, something was trying to hold you from entering your body. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, this is the thing. I was actually, there was actually like in the next room over, it was like somebody playing some really demonic music, and it's telling me to die. I need to die now. And I remember my wife and daughter was like, they were just praying and in the name of Jesus, you know, leave, you know what I'm saying? And it was upsetting to me. Because this is actually, this is before heart transplant. Yeah, I think it was before heart transplant. And it just went on, and I'm just praying, Lord, please save me. And all of a sudden, after so long, it seemed like it's almost forever, that the demon actually just started just breaking down and apologizing for what he did.
Oh,
and after that,
yeah.
You know, everything's good. But it was such a horrifying situation, you know.
Well, you were afraid
that
you were not going to be able to enter. That's what I was like when you had first shared the experience. And, and it's just that's what was mind-blowing. And I've heard many near-deaths. Experiences and stories to where people, when they have the experience, is different experiences. I've heard of this one lady. She said something. Lashon Hara is normally like something when you're having the evil tongue. And she was telling her story about something similar, that she was afraid she wasn't going to be able to return to her body because she was speaking Lashon Hara, which is the evil tongue in the Jewish term. And she was afraid. They were telling her, hey, you may not come back. And one of the rabbis who had passed on before her, he was pleading her case and before Hashem, which is God. And, you know, she was just, you know, it was a similar thing. That's why I was like, that's why I wanted to touch on it. And I'm sorry, I don't want to, you know, go into that.
No,
but it was a similar thing to where people had a struggle. And, and I know you told me to remind you of certain things. And then there was another part, and I know you wanted to get in with the donor, the woman who had donated the heart to you. I know you wanted to get, but before you go into it, I wanted to just ask another question about when you were coming back, because I know the guy with the truck, I remember you sharing with me, he wanted you to pay him something. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I think it was something in regards to something that was unreasonable. And I'm like, you know, I don't, you know, you can have whatever I got. I, you know, I don't have it. But
right.
it was such a scary, scary situation. You know, I think I suppressed a lot of it because of the horror of some of this stuff, you know. And I'm glad that I put it in writing. And I'm glad that you have brung it up because it was some horrifying stuff. I mean, when you don't know and you have not gave yourself to God, you know, then there's always the fear, you know. And I was always in church as a younger person. And I still love God and our Creator in Jesus. I love all of them. You know, but the thing of it is when you come down to that border bottom line, and you know that there's some things that you did was not right. And I just felt that in my situation, and everybody might have a different take on it, but with my review, I thought I just judged myself, you know, and we have a loving God, and he just allows you to see what you did. And it's like a movie, you know, it's like what you did. And you kind of, you know, you kind of look at it and say, you know what, I really didn't do too good in life. And then you, some people have the opportunity to come back, go back. Some don't, you know, I mean, so I didn't want to come back, but, you know, I had to. And it's just, I think the reasoning is some of the things that I'm trying to do now is trying to make the world a better place, because I realized that one thing about planet Earth is that it's about love, and that's because we have a loving God. And people just don't get it. I mean, we have some real negative entities here on this planet, and we are constantly fighting against that. But if you're able to really show love to your people, to everybody, you know, negativity cannot seep in unless you allow it. So, you know, this has made a change in me. And then going into Gabriel's story, it's just remarkable, because there's no way that I would know the things I knew about Gabby other than her coming to me in my dreams. She actually came to me on another occasion where I was going through, I thought it was her apartment because I never seen the outside, but me and my friend once again were walking through what I thought was her apartment, but it was her house. And I described every room to a T. And I with her mom.
Now, before you get into the Gabby story, hold one second. Before you get into that story, I wanted to take a break. Hold that thought, Billy. I wanted to take a break. So to give you a chance to gather all of your thoughts, and we will take a really, really, really fast commercial break. And you are listening to the Black Jewish Queen live chat here on CRS Radio.
And hello to all of my supporters and listeners. This is Dr. Denise Lopatis, the host of the Black Jewish Queen Live Chat on the Caribbean Radio Show. I proudly support the mission of Give Back Jamaica Incorporated and the founder, Dr. Evie, of the Caribbean Radio Show. Dr. Evie helps children and families throughout Jamaica through shoe donations. We urge our listeners to support this great cause by donation of shoes or any monetary gift of your choice. Any donation, big or small, makes a huge difference, especially during the hurricane season. You can contact Dr. Evie by email at givebackjamaica@gmail.com. That is givebackjamaica@gmail.com. Or you can visit the webpage at www.givebackjamaica.org. That is www.givebackjamaica.org. Whatever it takes to build a nation.
From author Dr. Denise Gotatis comes a self-help guide that will give you valuable information about the world around you in ways never imagined. The Metaphysical God in Relation to His Creation. Available on Amazon. In this must-read book, you will learn about your importance in the world and the metaphysical universe around you. You will be introduced to the Metaphysical God who has a relationship with you and those around you. Whether you are aware of this or not, you come into contact with Him daily. He is omnipresent metaphysically. He is in and outside of His creation. And what does a metaphysical God have to do with you and the creation around you? You are a very big piece of a huge puzzle. The Metaphysical God in Relation to His Creator, from author Dr. Denise Gotatis, is available on Amazon. Order your copy right now.
portion of the story by music producer Billy Tappan. And Billy, you were going into the part in which you were about to receive your heart. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, yeah. As I was talking about the situation, and we'll go back to the heart before I get deep into Gabby's story, but I remember every night I was seeing pretty much like every other day there were like helicopters coming in, and I'd often wonder whether this would be the night or the day that I would get my heart, because I was up against the battle because of my being down. So at this particular time, my blood cells were right. I was back on the donors list. And the doctors came in, because I always asked them, you know, did any hearts come in? He says, yeah, we had a couple that they were not that good, so we couldn't use them. So one night they came in, and they were looking all sad, and I'm like, oh, man, I must be off the list again, you know. And he says, I came in here to say that we found a heart. I'm like, really? He says, yeah. And then all of a sudden I felt really, really bad. I says, I don't want it. He says, what? I says, I don't want it. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right. You know, I mean, I don't know who it is. They'll say whether it's a female or a male, but they wouldn't give any, you know, background. And they'll give you the age. And it's like, I don't want it. I just, you know, I'm looking at my life and I just, you know, I don't feel that I deserve it. So, you know, they stepped out and says, we're going to give you a few minutes to think about it. We don't have a lot of time. You know, we got to start moving on things. I says, okay. So one of the nurses that used to take care of me came in and she sat down with me. She says, look it. She says, this is a golden opportunity for you. She says, the person that gave the heart up wanted you to have this. And she kept on talking. I don't feel right about it, you know? And finally she convinced me. And they started from that point just kind of rushing things and rushing me over to get everything taken care of. That was probably the most, I had literal tears in my eyes because somebody had to die for me to get this heart. And it was just devastating. But after I got the letter and I had a chance to meet the family, it was awesome. You know, it was awesome. And, and you know, as I was saying, I'm kind of jumping around because I'm going back and forth in my head.
Oh, no, it's okay.
The great things that have happened due to God and due to this young lady. You know, the pictures, I have pictures of her in my profile because she's a part of me and I'm a part of her. And I'm trying to do the best because she was on the air also with one of her best friends. And that's another thing that's ironic because here I am. I had no idea that I'd be, you know, hosting the show. You know, I just never knew that I would. But it just was ironic. But her life, as we're going through her house, I describe everything to a T to her mother, and it's very well documented that is true of what I've seen, because there was a room, because I went through, there was like different plants and, you know, kind of neutral colors, and there was one room that was like red, and I'm like,
wow,
the room was red. I couldn't understand it, and she says, was it a light red or a dark red? I said, it was a dark red. She says, well, that was the room, because she worked like night shift. Because she was on the air, and then she worked for the post office. So she had to have the room. She worked third shift, so she had to have dark in there. And that's how that came up. Now, how would I know that? There's no way for me to know it because I was not connected to the family. So when I had a chance to actually sit down with them, I brought pictures of myself. And as I was coming up as a kid, and they showed me pictures. And what stuck out was one picture. When she was younger, she was probably about maybe 12 or 13. And what stuck out is that I felt very sick. Something told me that they were in California. And I asked her mom, I says, you guys are in California when this picture was taken. She says, yeah, we were, because I think they're planning on going to Disney or something. But I says, was she sick? I said, I felt like she was sick. She says, yeah, matter of fact, she was. She had a severe toothache, and they had to take care of that. So that was something that, you know, was really crazy. And then I happened to notice some of her friends that came. At least her best friend was a guy by the name of Tony. We call him Big Tony. And he walked in, and as soon as I looked at him, I felt I know him. You know, but I never met this guy a day in my life. And that was so bizarre. And even her cousin was like a sister. I knew her, too. I knew her, too. And it's like, I've never met these guys a day in my life. So we're up.
Now, you think through this experience, do you think this experience that something not only gave you, how could I put it, spiritually, something gave you a connection? Somehow you guys got connected spiritually through your near-death experience and then through you receiving the heart, which was a miracle. Do you think something extra, some extra gift was given to you since you were sent back? Do you think that happened? Or?
Yeah, I actually do.
You felt different than you did before.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I actually do. And see, this is the thing. When I got up to talk with Big Tone and the close friends, when they connected, they would say a saying that I just came out with, and we're just talking, and I just said, tag team back again. And that's what she always would say when they hooked up. How would I know?
Wow.
How would I know?
I know. Wow. Now, Billy, would you be willing to take any callers' questions or anything if they have any questions? Because right now, okay, I'm going to just open up the line to the callers that I do see on the board. And if anyone have any questions, feel free to interject in while Billy tells his story. The lines are open right now.
Okay.
Any callers want to ask any questions? Okay. Well, yeah, Billy, go ahead and continue.
Okay. So, you know, as I did that with the tag team back again, they were all just freaked out. They just totally freaked out. And I knew from that point in time there was something different. And as we go through my life with the dreams and stuff like that, she actually came to me again, and she actually told me that she loved me and to thank me for all that I'd done. And it was some other things that happened at the last part of this, and I just have to go back into the story and see. But there were probably 4 or 5 different events that happened from her. Now, after I taken and received the last dream of her thanking and thanking me and tell her to, she first came and said, tell my mom that I'm fine and not to worry. That was the first time that she came. And then when the last time that I ever had a dream about her was when she came and told me, thank you and I love you. I've never dreamed of her from that point on. So. The message that she wanted to get out, she got out. So it's no way for me to know any of this stuff, no way, because I had no connections with the family. Now, as I do research through one of my cousins that actually does the family research, I think they're cousins. I think they're cousins. They're from out of Detroit. But that was research. So that was kind of, you know, crazy. But it was just, it was a crazy, crazy time. And I didn't fear it, but I feel that a lot of times she's near me. And, you know, my journey now is to continue love and try to do the very best I can to spread the love. and try to wake up people on what's going on with the world. We can change things if we just love one another, you know, and that's kind of my message.
That's right.
And this is the direction I had no idea that I'd go in. You know, I mean, I've been a writer. I've did some acting, you know what I'm saying? And entertainment has been my life for eons, you know what I'm saying? So it was hard for me to actually sit down and start putting the story together. And I'm hoping to have it finished up relatively soon. So
now I know that you're working on a movie.
Yes, yes.
I know you're working on a movie. And
yes.
You got this, you know, I know you're getting the script and everything together. Is there going to be any type of like casting calls for actors and things to come on and are you at that point? Are you at the point of getting production together, the directors, are you at that point?
Well, this is what's going on. I have the film crew just trying to raise the money. You know, at this stage of the game,
I have
people in mind that I want to have in the film project. I want it to be a little bit of some familiar faces, but also do some, you know, local faces to give them some exposure. Mm. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're not talking about a huge budget. We're talking probably about maybe $500,000. You know, it's not really for independent company, it's not a lot of money, so I'm just trying to raise that, and that would, I think, when people see a project like this, I think it's, they'll start believing that there is something other than this here, that, you know, there's more to the life, the afterlife is what's going on. So I think they'd get a lot out of this project, and I'm hoping that we can get it done. The script is ready. Just now it's just waiting for the funding to come through. So once that happens, we're on the move. We're starting to do it. You know, if we have to do it in small increments, then we'll do that. And just, you know, get the casting call out and get the people. I've been talking with, what's his name? Nunez. He's actually an actor. He played in Life, Miguel
Right.
Nunez. I'm actually, you know, I've been talking to him. I'm considering him. He doesn't know it yet, but I'm considering him as one of the people to be in this. Yeah, I'm considering him. Yeah, and there's a couple
a couple of other actors. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I don't know why it popped into my mind. Your mother, I heard her telling me, hey, you know what? Denise, I want you to come to a family reunion because I want you to meet Heather Locklear. You know, that's Billy's cousin. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll come. And then she was saying Della Reese. And today I was just laughing a little bit with you because you discover Smokey Robinson is your cousin, and I'm like, you know what? Side by side, looking at you guys look alike.
Yeah, they always tell me that. And, you know, it was kind of ironic because I never had a chance to meet him. And I always did. He was kind of like one of my favorites coming up as a kid. He was very, very one of my favorites. So that was interesting when I found that out. I'm like, oh, wow, this is really, really, we got a heck of a family tree with a lot of talent because this music has been through all my family's life. Everybody's been a musician or something, you know. So I have
never in a million years would I think Heather Locklear was your cousin.
Yeah, she probably would never say it, but, you know, it's like, well, it is what it is. If you look at if you look at her and you look at my Aunt Margie, there is a striking resemblance, you know,
it's
very
striking resemblance.
So it's like it's in the nose because the Letts, it's in the nose, you know, everybody that has got the connection that is a Lett generally has that nose, that kind of identifies the family. It's kind of like a family trait. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
my grandpa's nose, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it's crazy because we come in all colors, but that's the way the world is.
Yeah.
The world is like that.
Yeah.
So we have
but
to
I know
take
for
and,
a fact your movie in what you're doing right now with your projects, because I know that you were saying, now your mother, she has been, I know, a big inspiration for you throughout everything that's happened in your life. And she was a beautiful, beautiful person. I know that she followed you in thick and thin. And when I first met you, the Grand Rapids Theater, where where you were promoting music and everybody auditioned for your music label, including me. But I was just going to have fun. But yes, and I know that your mom, she believed in everything that you did. She was the biggest inspiration for your life. Did you, you know, it was weird when it happened, when you went in a hospital, which she told me. And then it turned out that, you know, they were, she was praying, and she's like, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to lose him. It's just too soon. I don't want my, you know, in other words, in some way she expressed to me, she didn't want you to go before her. And it was just something to me how everything, you know, happened, but I know that it happened for a reason.
It did.
I have to mention her. She was just such a best friend to me. And I know your mother, nobody can, you know, that closeness. Because she, everything, she was just your cheerleader. She was just your cheerleader.
She was.
And I know that, I don't know. It's really ironic. It's as though she prayed you back so she could, you know, she could go before you. And that's what I had got out of the whole thing with her. And she was something, because she called me, because when she got sick, and, you know, I think I was communicating partially with you and Alicia. I think I had gotten off of Facebook where you couldn't contact, where you guys could not contact me. And I really do believe, Billy, that she preserved, it was kind of weird, like a time warp kind of thing. You know how you could jump from the past to present in the future, you know, kind of thing. But those prayers, they're metaphysically anyway, because they're not in this dimension. It's outside of time and space. And that's what I kind of think happened between you and her, you know. And she was laughing. She called me. And I told you this. Ha, 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 Denise, guess what? I said, what, Doris? Because I think we were living in Wisconsin. And she said, Denise, guess what?
So.
I said, what, Doris? I died. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She said, I died. You know what? I laid down and I didn't feel. I said, did it hurt? And she said, no, I didn't feel a thing, you know. I died and was cracking up laughing. I said, Doris, were you praying? Did you say? She's like, oh, she says, yeah, you know, God came to me and, you know, he told me everything was okay. And I'm like, okay, she died. She died. And she's laughing about it.
Yeah, I think she
Your
told
mom
me that.
Me up.
And the thing of it is, she was a wonderful person. I truly, truly hurt because of what happened. But she was a remarkable, remarkable person. And when she did get sick, when she got sick, I went down there for about 9 months to take care of her and my stepfather. And she was just a wonderful person. She was always, like you said, my cheerleader. She always contacted me. I mean, I talked with her every day, you know, all the time before she got sick. And then when I got down there, and it really, she wasn't sick. She actually just broke her collarbone and just started kind of just a lot of things started happening after that. I got this doctor in, which was the wrong decision to make, and they ended up killing her, you know, basically at the end
and
of the
for
day.
Some, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and it just, it made no sense to me because my mom wasn't one to actually believe in taking any type of medication. I couldn't even get her to take an aspirin. She would do it as she needed, but
wow.
she would not just do it on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, I mean,
no,
if you look at hindsight, you look at hindsight, you know, I think God took her for a reason because he needed her more than I needed her. And I think that his situation was that I don't want her to experience what the future is bringing because my mom
mm-hmm.
would not be able to tolerate or deal with the situation that's going on in the world. With all this madness,
right.
She would just be very, very worried and scared. And I think as much as I kind of fought it myself, but I was trying to do the best I could for her situation, and I thought I was doing the right thing. But, you know, in the midst of the whole situation, God only knows what's right for us all.
But
and
you
that
know what?
Was his story.
You did. You did because
yeah.
for some unknown reason, it happened for a reason the way it did. And
yeah.
I believe that you were even brought back for a reason. I mean, you weren't finished yet doing all that you could do to show people how to love each other through what you're doing as a music promoter, music producer, and what you're getting ready to do as a Hollywood movie producer, and your life, all the things that you have behind you, is going to go forward in the things that you were sent back for to do in this world. And, you know, I probably told you this before, in the Jewish term, it's called Tikkun Olam. It's to heal the world. And you know, it's going to take each and every one of us to do that, you know. And I believe partially, Billy, that's why, you know, Hashem, why God, he sent you back for a very good reason for the youth that is in America that that, you know, have the inner city rough lifestyle. And I believe that you are one of the people that they can look up to as far as being, you know, in Motown, an alumni, a producer, somebody who has the power to make a difference in a whole lot of people's lives. And I believe, you know, things do happen for a reason, but I know it for a fact. And that's why I'm just so motivated and so happy to work with you, to work with Eve, because I know, you know, in hindsight, you know that it's a greater purpose for that than what you can even imagine or perceive. And I know that he sent you back, God, he sent you back for that reason, to spread that love.
Yeah, and so. I'm a different person, ultimately, because I always love people. But it's just a difference because I see the way the world is going. And I, with a project like what I'm doing, I think it will touch a lot of people because, like I said, I've been a part of everything. I've did a lot of drugs throughout my life. I lived the life as far as with women and stuff like that. I lived the life. But at the end of the day, it's not worth it all. It's like you got to take and push everything aside and focus on God and what God wants. And the thing of it is love will solve the whole situation if people stop hating one another for no reason, you know, and just start loving their neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's perfect, but, you know, at least, you know, send the love to people, color they are. You know what I'm saying? It's about loving one another, and
that's
you'll have
right.
a changed world. Now you have everything that's chaotic because that's what they're pushing, this chaotic situation. They're pushing all these agendas, and we have to all wake up
mm-hmm.
and fight against that. And it seems like this particular generation
yeah.
is just not trying to do anything. You know, the stuff that they're doing now in terms of pushing their agenda, our generation would not even deal with what they're doing now. You know, I mean, all the promotions of you know, violating the kids and in public schools.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes on and on and on. And I just don't want to start getting into that. But I think that God has personally
it's okay. You perfectly
yeah.
can. It's okay.
Yeah.
Because,
it's,
yes,
it's
the
crazy.
Things are, yes, it is.
What kind of madness
is
this?
I agree
what
with
kind
you.
Of madness is this? You know, I mean, like when I was in school, they had to take sex education, but you can only do that in 11th or 12th grade. Now, they got kids in 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. They're trying to get them to change genders and drag queens coming in and all that kind of stuff. That's nothing but the devil. At the end of the day, that's some wicked, wicked people. And nobody's saying up. Nobody's standing up. Very few are. You know, and I tell them the recipe to that whole situation is take and pull your kids out of there. Public school cannot function without the funding of the government. So if there's no kids there, there's no head count. You see what I'm saying? And they've got to take control of the school. The parents have to do that. You know, you don't let dictate what the school board has to say. The parents have the right. That's their child. The school doesn't own their child because they're there for 6, 7 hours a day. You know what I'm saying? The parents, the woman had that child. The father and the mother had that child. So they're allowing the state to take and represent themselves as the parent, which is outrageous.
Right.
And I don't know how it's going on so long. It's got to be something in the air because I you know, I don't see it. I mean,
it's totally different.
Right now,
yes.
Yeah. They'd be
yes, it doesn't feel
and
the same.
Yeah, I'd have
yeah,
some words.
Yeah, it doesn't feel the same. It's like, you know, you're somewhere else. You're on a total different planet from 20 years ago.
Exactly. Exactly.
So
we have to change.
And this comes in.
We have the ability to change.
Yep.
The ability to change.
And for a time such as this, you were here. You're here to speak the truth as you do on the chat reel. Now, the chat reel, all of the things that are coming up on the chat reel, I'm excited about that because I know you're going to come on the Black Jewish Queen Live chat anytime. You're welcome anytime as you've allowed me to host the chat reel with you, and I'm so appreciative. But I know that there will be even more, you probably will share even more about this experience at times on the chat reel when you think about the stuff that you missed on here. And you could also, you know, come back again too and, you know, share anything you want. I'm opening up the lines. I want everybody who has called in to listen in. If you have any question to Billy, tap in. This is the time to ask your questions. Any callers there at all?
I'm here for you. You know, I'll answer whatever you want.
Any questions? We do have callers, and the lines are all open, and you could ask him any question you want about his experience. And, yes, it was a metaphysical experience. It's something that happened to him beyond when he was called clinically dead. He coded and he's seen things. He's seen his life passing before his eyes, and he is speaking about what he heard, what he's seen. Now, I wanted to ask you a question, too, about it, Billy, during that time. Now, before you went into the state of your death right before, is there anything unusual that you've seen? Because I know some people that have the experience, they say we always have the idea, even in cartoons and stuff. Did you see like a Grim Reaper or anything? Did you see a person's face before you passed from this life before you died? Or how was that experience? I'm sure a lot of people have that question, but they are not bold enough to ask it. But I'm curious, did you see a Grim Reaper? What did you see before that experience happened to you?
Well, I remember one thing I did see. I didn't see anything like that. It was just, it was kind of like there's a wicked, evil guy and a woman. And it was kind of crazy because I was like, on this particular situation, this is before I went, before I died. This is when I was in a coma. They induced me into a coma. And what it was is there were wicked people that tied me up and was trying to shine this laser in my eyes, and I kept on struggling. And it's just so weird how this interacted with the doctors actually restraining me.
Ooh.
At the same time, people were doing everything they could to me. You know what I'm saying? And when I woke up, I found out they had me strapped down because my heart was so weak, they had to put a box on the side of me. And I was fighting them, but I was out. I was, like, literally in a coma because they had induced me into a coma. And I remember that distinctively. It stuck with me because when I started telling the story what they were doing, my wife and my kids was like, they were shining this laser at the same time that was happening. And that is just ironic to me how it was so in tune. And I guess our message to the brain is like three seconds before something happens, till you see it. 3 seconds before
right.
it happens. It's something that they said it because actually what they're doing is like somehow the brain interconnects with whatever procedures is going
wow.
on if you're allowed to. But I've never seen anything like that in my life. When I woke up, that's what exactly was going on. But I was seeing some wicked people at that time
mm-hmm.
that was trying to actually blind me and torture me and all kinds of stuff like that. So,
Now, did you experience floating over yourself and seeing yourself laying in the bed?
Initially, yes. And, I didn't recognize me at first, and then that's when I just
mm-hmm.
entered in to the part where I'm just kind of wandering through this space where I met the old man, what I'm saying? And,
right.
He's the one that directed me, but he wanted money. I think I had about $84. It's something like that. I think I said I got $84, but it was just kind of ironic. But when I did go through the review, that was really a hard one. That was a hard one. And I think that anybody in their life that has lived life, their reviews are going to affect them in some kind of a way.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Everything
yes.
that I have done, I'm trying to do the right thing in life, and like
mm-hmm.
I said, I enjoy my life, but I want to help people, and especially the younger kids coming up. But I think the story will really help people in general that may have reservations and doubts about this. But it is the truth. What I wrote,
right.
was the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that's what
mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to do, that's what I kind of perceived with God, So I started doing it in my head at the hospital. And when I came home, I actually hooked up with one of my cousins, and we put the thing together. And, I just would, because I was too weak to actually write. So I was writing stuff. I did a little writing, and then we talk on the phone. When he got it, I send it through the mail, and then he get it, and then we go ahead and get on the phone and discuss it, and then he goes back in and he'll put it in. But it's an amazing, amazing story, and I'd like to see it on the screens. I think that it would benefit a lot of people. It's just the funding part is what we're working to try to do. And if that
now,
happens or when that
you
happens,
said
well,
something
yeah,
very, very important. Yeah, because you said something very, very important that I was kind of, when you said that when you when you do something wrong to people, you can, when you were seeing the plasma screen, your life review, you felt so awful. It came like it was a part of you when you were watching your life review on that big screen, and that now you are more careful, and you are careful about how you walk around, how you treat people, how you do people, and you repent. And, you know, it's ironic because it's a Jewish feast day that's coming up. I mean, not feast day. Well, we can understand feast day, but it's a Jewish holiday that comes up, and it's called Yom Kippur. And it's going to be October 4th, 2022. And on that day, everyone fasts from sun up to sundown. And the whole time, it's a state of repentance, and they call it teshuva. Teshuva is repentance in Hebrew. But, you know, stressing that in all of this, I mean, it's important for people to recognize when they do wrong others, like you said, because after your life ends, you're going to experience that feeling that you got. You said you judged yourself, because and that's an important point too that you made, Billy, because what people do not understand is that when you are, whatever you do to others, that's the judgment that you have upon you yourself. It's going to happen to you, and it's what other people, they believe, hey, they call it karma. But if you don't want it done to you, don't do it to other people. And, you know, that's wow. I mean, your experience, it speaks volumes to everybody on the physical realm, because I believe that that's the reason why it happened. It happened so you could come back and warn everybody, hey, you know, look, love one another. And I think, you know, that's what you, that's the whole thing about your experience. And that's the whole thing about you. You and your mom, you guys are very, very loving people. Very.
Yeah.
Very
and
loving
what
people.
It is, you know. And you really, really feel the pain. That's what's so ironic about the situation. You can't change anything you say when you're going through your review, because you're outside yourself, you're in yourself. You can't change anything. What's been said has been said. You know, and that's mm-hmm. the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So that's where the guilt comes in, is when you hear it and you can't do anything to change it, and you feel what they felt. It could be something that doesn't, you don't really realize that you hurt somebody. You know, that's the thing. You know, you might say something and not realizing that it was something that in that conversation that made them, you know, feel bad. You know what I'm saying? And you feel all that. It's just ironic experience, and you feel
wow.
the pain, man. That's the thing. You feel the pain, you know. So if you just took and just start just talking to somebody, and you're mad at them, they may be innocent, and they're just hurt, just really hurt, and then you feel that. So it's just something that I wouldn't want for anybody to experience that part of it. But we're all going to experience that at some point when we leave. So I'm trying to do the very best. God knows I'm trying to do the very best I can to make an impact on this world while I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to be everybody playing their part, you know, but at least I can plant the seed. You know, I can plant the seed with the project, with the film project, and then start working through different media outlets and start going into school speaking. And just trying to change the narrative of what is going on. And that's what's got to be done. Nobody's willing to take
now,
the situation
any callers,
up, but I am.
Any callers, last call. Any callers, if there's anyone on, if you would like to ask Billy Tappan a question, ask the question. Anyone? Anyone want it? Go ahead,
like
caller, if you're there. Yeah.
Billy.
I opened the lines up, by the
way. There's somebody there. There's somebody there. Yes. Go ahead, caller.
Would you like to ask a question, caller? about...
Yes, I
go
would.
Go ahead.
Yes.
What's your name?
Now, Al.
Al, okay,
okay
Al. Go ahead and ask your question.
Go ahead.
Okay, now, the last thing before you had your heart transplant, do you feel that it's the same or has your thought process and the way you feel about things, has that changed any for the
yes.
person that you were?
Yes. Yes. It is more, I'm more of a loving person, more of a helpful person that I wasn't a bad person, but I see that the change that took place was something that transpired definitely after the heart transplant. Now, whether it's a little of Gabby in me, because that was her nickname, I don't know. But I know that my visions are a lot different and more focused than what it was prior to the heart transplant.
Okay,
so
I have another question.
You know, sure.
This question here. Now, you think it would make a difference if it was a female heart or a male heart?
I don't think it would make a difference. I think that you would take on somewhat of the trait of that donor. I'll give you a prime example. The doctor that I go to, he had a patient that received, she's a female, she's a teacher, and received a biker's heart. And this lady never drank a day in her life, never smoked, and she took up the traits of the donor. And she went out and got her Harley and was drinking and all that kind of stuff, smoking. So, yeah, I mean, there's been cases that they carry that portion of that person with them. And ironically,
wow.
look at me now. You know, I'm hosting the show, and so did Gabby host the show. I didn't
yeah.
see this even coming. I didn't even see it coming, you know. But it's telling all that.
Yeah.
So that's something that you do take on. Go ahead.
Question. What time does your show come on?
It comes on from 8 to 10 p.m. on Mondays. It's called the Billy and Friends on the Cat Reel, and it's
yes,
on the
sir.
Caribbean radio station, the Knowledge Station.
Awesome.
So, yes.
And yes, caller, Al, thank you so much for calling in and asking your question. And, you know, feel free to come on. It comes on the Monday, like Billy said. Feel free to come on any one of these programs because Billy will be on this one and he will be on the chat reel as a host and he will be everywhere. And, you know, you're welcome to call anytime, Al, and ask any questions. We just thank you so much.
All right. Love you, brother.
Love you too, man. You have a good day. Okay, we're back. So,
All right.
So that's on that. You take on that part of the person. Now, I don't know about other
yeah.
organs, but I know that the heart is, it's kind of that, the soul of the person. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you get that, you know. So it's just ironic. I just, like I said, just how my life has changed and turned around to try to do the very best I can for humanity.
That's awesome.
And,
well, Billy,
yeah, I mean, that's,
it's just, that's the way it is. It turned you around. It made you the person that you are today, and it's a great person. Billy,
thank you.
At this time, I so much want to just thank you for coming on the program and come back anytime you want. I mean, I call you another host on the program because we are just a sister, brother programs and everything. And I just thank you so much for coming on. And what we're going to do is we are going to go out with a song. And at the same time, I wanted to let everyone know if you do want to support Billy, the film project, the chat reel, you can look at down in the description and it will have the PayPal address in which you can donate to his movie project and into his chat reel program, as well as support the Black Jewish Queen Life chat program. All of these things, all of the proceeds that you do give will go directly to Billy Tappan to support his program. And we sure do really appreciate him, and we just thank him so much for just coming on the program. It means a lot, Billy. Thank you so much. And we're going to go out too with the Mariah Carey song. And Billy, anything lastly you would like to say?
Sure. I really appreciate coming on, Denise. And I know that your program will prosper, as well as Billy and friends in the chat reel. I just want to tell people, the best thing you can do for God is please love. Please love one another, and you'll have a much better world. No wicked nor negativity can step in if you love truly from your heart. You know, I mean, we're here on a spiritual journey. You know, everything that we see in life, you know, this money situation, it's not really real. But we have to have it to be able to get by. So do whatever you can in life, you know. Make it a great life for yourself. You know, helping people is the key. And that's the best I can say.
That's right.
You know, and I appreciate everything. I appreciate everybody. Love you all.
Oh, great. Yes. And yes, we will take it out with a song. Thank you so much, Billy, for coming on.
You are welcome.
They can't.